Today we are interviewing Dolphins long snapper Tabor Pepper. Tabor, how are you doing today?
Good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. My class got canceled, as I had told you previously, so not having a class today has been pretty nice. Got, you know, able to sleep in. But I wanted to interview you for a while. When I messaged you on Twitter, I had mentioned that, but never kind of shot the shot. You were one of the, you know, more popular guys once, I guess, the preseason cuts came, because everyone was, you know, hammering for John Denny once his agent, I believe, tweeted out he came back. And then all of a sudden, it was like Tabor Pepper came and everyone was like, who's this person? And then you burst, I guess, onto the scene with some Dolphins fans, because you were, for us younger ones at least, you were personable. We saw you played video games. You were kind of like different. And I think a lot of Dolphins fans who, you know, like to talk about, oh, John Denny the GOAT, all this stuff, it was a little bit different. And I guess they were more okay in a way because of some of the stuff they did. But for you to get to the Dolphins, it seemed like it's been a bit of a journey. And I wanted to ask, you know, how has that journey been? How has this season been as a member of the Dolphins, you know, going from several teams to finally now being on a team and sustained, like, being there?
Yeah, I mean, it really has been a journey since I've come out of college. I graduated in 2016, and I guess I can go through kind of my timeline after I graduated. I'll try to keep it as condensed as possible because I have some good stories. But came out of college, had a couple people before the draft telling me that, you know, they weren't going to draft me, but they wanted to sign me as a free agent afterwards. Nobody ended up doing that right off the bat. I went to two mini camps with the Ravens that summer. And then nobody ended up signing me. So I basically sat all through the 2016 season. And then I signed a futures deal with the Packers. I was there for 3 weeks during OTAs and got cut. And then I went to a mini camp with the Patriots. And then later that summer, I got to play in the last preseason game for the Ravens, because I had established a pretty good relationship with their coach. Got to play against the Saints for their last preseason game. And then I got cut the next day, but I was expecting it because it was kind of a favor. The Ravens special teams coach wanted to give Morgan Cox, their snapper, a break, and he also wanted to get me some NFL film. And then 4 weeks after that, the Packers long snapper got hurt. I stepped in for him for four games, and then I ended up getting my foot broken during practice. Sat the rest of the year on IR. And then nobody took a chance on me in 2018. Basically sat all year, went on five tryouts during the season. And then the Giants picked me up on a futures contract. All through OTAs with them this spring, and then training camp with them all summer. And then I got cut on cut day. Drove 9 hours back home to Michigan, and then the very next day the Dolphins called me and said, you know, we want to fly you down and work you out. And that was right when Hurricane Dorian was hitting. And so I was asking my agent, I was like, you know, did they give any indication of what they want, you know, from me? Is it just like kind of an emergency list update? Like, they want to work guys out for their emergency list? And she goes, I think they're just trying to get whoever they can get in here as fast as they can because of Dorian hitting. We had no clue what was going on. Obviously that day that I got signed, 15 people ended up getting cut and signed. And that was pretty crazy, to walk into. But, you know, after that, the season was kind of happening so fast, I had to get my head on straight and, you know,
just go with it
basically.
How is the, I want to get into the Dolphin stuff, obviously, but how is it, you know, as an NFL player, going, you said you went into the 2016 NFL draft, you went undrafted, and then for all these years now, kind of going through practice squads, mini camps, OTAs, getting cut, getting all this other stuff, how is that for, I guess, a mindset of a player going from one team to another team to another team and then finally landing?
I swear, you know, after, you know, when I got signed to the Packers the first time and then cut 3 weeks after OTA started, you know, that was really, really hard on me. I didn't really understand. I knew the road to the NFL was going to be hard. And then, you know, later that season playing, after I played a little bit for them and then got hurt, I thought, oh, I have four games worth of experience. Teams are going to be calling me. you know, I'm for sure going to get a spot on a team for OTAs and training camp and stuff like that. And it never came, and it was really, really crazy. And it kind of threw me for a loop. And I mean, I've every possible free agent scenario has happened to me. And the crazy thing is once I think everything had happened to me, something new would happen. One time I had a team call me, actually it was my rookie year. I had a team call me. They said, hey, during training camp, they said, we're going to fly you out. It was a Tuesday. You're going to practice Wednesday and you're going to play against this team in the preseason on Thursday. And so I get to the airport and 20 minutes before I board, they called me and they said, hey, have you talked to your agent lately? And I said, well, not since this afternoon when she told me I was flying out. And they said, they were like, oh man, we're sorry. We had an injury today at practice and we can't bring you out. And I just like stayed on the phone. It was like silent for a second. I was like, so am I going home? And they're like, yeah, they're like, you know, you might hear from us, you might not. And I've never heard from that team again, actually.
Jesus, that's that kind of situation. Did you, I don't know if this is too personal here, but was the flight paid for by you? Was it paid for by the team? Were they?
Oh, yeah. All the teams pay for flights and stuff like that. So it's not like I had to eat that cost, but it was just the fact that I had gone through security. I was sitting at the gate and like they were about to start boarding. It's really crazy because it's, you know, your mind goes to what if I had already been on the plane and they decided they weren't going to sign me? Were they just going to send me back or were they going to like try to make a roster spot open up if I was already there? Like, you know, and after that was probably the hardest thing that ever happened to me. I remember my mom that Christmas made a the ticket that I had, the boarding pass that I had. I guess she got it somehow. And framed it and then put the definition of perseverance at the bottom of the frame. And it's one of my favorite things that I have through my journey of trying to make it to the NFL.
That's great to have though, especially, I mean, that's a total mom move as well, to like a parent move, a family move, to kind of try to keep you in the zone and try to keep you focused on what, you know, your goal is supposed to be. So you finally now get to the Dolphins. Of course, fans have been talking about other things related to the season, but you're with the Dolphins. You're working with two guys who a lot of fans really like in terms of the kicking, with Matt Hawk and Jason Sanders. Jason, of course, had a great year last year, and Matt Hawk, he has a boom of a leg as well. How was your experience first? You know, you waved by the Giants and then picked up by the Dolphins right before Dorian or in that area. When you came on, what was your first experience with those guys and some other coaches?
It was kind of crazy, especially with those guys, because that day that I came in, whenever they cut 15 people and brought 15 new people in, that was after the 90 to 53 man cut. So really there were like almost 50 people worth of, you know, 50 people cut in 2 days. You know, we had practice that day, so everybody was still like in that mode, but I think everybody was kind of, their head was on a swivel, you know, checking their back just in case, you know, the guy who cuts people came and grabbed them. But it took a couple days, and I was talking to Jason and Matt here and there, and I would like point to somebody. I was like, hey, what's his name? And they would look at me and they go, we don't know, just because they brought so many new people in all at once. And it was like that for a couple weeks, but, you know, eventually we all got really, really close. And, you know, especially after the first couple games, everybody got super close because we knew that we were pretty much the only people that we got. The only people that have our backs are the people in the locker room, basically.
And is that a tight-knit group, the special teams unit? I mean, we've had some, I guess, media member. I guess the biggest media member, of course, that was a part of the brand, is Pat McAfee. So he's the only one that sort of talks about it. But in terms of the rest of the team, a lot of NFL fans like to clown and say that, you know, kickers aren't people. And I would guarantee some don't really know what a long snapper is. Do you think that you might be the most tight-knit group out of everybody on the team?
Yeah, here and there. Because, well, yeah, especially those two. I know that Jason and Matt are super, super close. And I think me coming in this year, you know, towards the end of the season, we got pretty close, but they were actually roommates. So they lived together. I think all last season and all this season too. So they're super, super close. But I, you know, any specialist group is going to be tight no matter what. And yeah, I would say probably probably us, and then probably the O-line, just by virtue of them being the O-line, they're always usually pretty close too. Just yeah, on their own.
That's more so what I was getting at, kind of just the group in general, like, you know, the specialists and stuff like that. The other thing I wanted to ask, which I found a little bit interesting, because I bring up Pat McAfee, I like to watch his stuff and his content. I think it's a nice breath of fresh air from what we usually get in the media. And he had a video, part of his podcast, where he was talking about who's to blame for a missed kick. And he was mentioning that sometimes it might be the holder, sometimes it could be the snapper, sometimes it's the kicker. There's a lot of different variables to it. I wanted to get your take on that. And, you know, when a kick is missed, is what plays into it?
Yeah, so, you know, I've heard Pat talk about the things that you're mentioning. Basically, you know, every play in football, whether it's special teams or just a normal offensive play, it all starts with the snap. You know, sometimes you see center QB mess up their exchange. Same thing with a long snapper and the holder. So it all starts with the snap. So if the snap is perfect, then the holder has an easier job. And then when the holder has a perfect hold, then it's an easier job for the kicker. And it goes the other way too. If the snapper messes up the snap, then the holder has to erase the snapper's mistake. And then if the holder messes up, the kicker has to erase everybody's mistake. So problems can combine or, you know, kind of multiply if everybody's not on the same page. And, you know, there's some holders that are more gifted than others. You know, especially in college, some of those holders aren't the best, just because, you know, a lot of punters don't have the greatest hands, especially in college. But once you get to the NFL, holding is nearly as important as punting whenever it comes to scouting punters and stuff like that, whenever teams want to bring them on. Because, you know, you kind of want to avoid using a backup quarterback if you can.
Yeah, I've seen, I bring up Pat McAfee a lot just because I like him and I like his personality, so I watch a lot of his stuff. I remember he had mentioned in some of his videos that when he was taken, he had lied and said that he could hold and that he had been holding, and Adam Vinatieri had sent him to a holding camp because he needed him to hold. And I mean, that's the greatest kicker of all time, so you got to do what the greatest kicker wants you to do. Mm-hmm. In terms of your season, you go through with the Dolphins, team finishes out very, very strong. There's one specific play that happened, and I don't quite remember if you were on the field for this, and I think you already know exactly what I'm asking, with the trick play from Hawk to Jason Sanders. Do you know, I'm not sure if you're on that play, so, or like if you're on the field, so I would want to know that. And then also just kind of how that play was drawn up, how you guys kind of, I guess, came with it and made it up.
So I was not on that play. And if you rewatch it, you can kind of figure out why. We put in a Kilgore out on the field because we needed the center to block one of the two D tackles that we were expecting them to put on the line in front of the center. So that's why I wasn't out there for that play. But basically the only, you know, our special teams coach is brilliant in terms of coming up with fakes. You know, I think we ran more fakes than probably anybody in the NFL. And the thing with fakes are, you know, you can have this fake that works every time in practice, and then all of a sudden it falls apart in a game, just due to one thing or the other. But that play turned out really, really well. Technically Matt was supposed to like bunny hop and like pop shot it up over, the defender and to Jason, but it just so happened that they kind of got up the field quick enough, and Jason kind of just did that little flick, and Matt just did that little flick and got it to Jason immediately. Yeah, it was amazing.
And is that something, I mean, you mentioned it, you can run it in practice and it works every time, and then you get into the game and it could not work. Is there any signal that maybe Matt has to give to Kilgore where it's like, okay, there's a look that we weren't expecting to see, we're not going to call it timeout or get into a different formation, or is it just we're running the play?
I think, you know, sometimes there's some where we're running it no matter what, and then sometimes we have the ability to call it off. I can't remember what the deal with that one was. I can't remember, but yeah, you know, sometimes there's certain looks where we just have to absolutely get out of it. And then there's some where it's like, you know what, we're just going for it no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, when I looked at the play originally and I was sitting there watching the game, I was like, okay, this looks exactly like the play sort of that we saw from the Colts a few years back against the Patriots.
And I know, like, it's funny. Yeah.
I wonder if this is going to go the same way. And then ball gets snapped. I'm like, well, they're doing it. And then just the little juke by Matt puts it into Jason. And then it's like, I erupted. I blew up my girlfriend's phone. I blew up all my friends' phones because I was like, there is no way that this happened. And even for, you know, stuff that I do with the Pro Football Network, we have, you know, Slack chats and stuff like that for all the Dolphins fans that are there. And that blew up because everyone's like, that was crazy to see. Going into next season, I don't know how your contract works, and you don't have to get into it specifically, but I just want to know, are you going to be a part of the Dolphins next season?
Yeah, technically I have a it's a two-year contract, so it went all the way through this season and technically goes through next season, but just in the NFL, you never know what's going to happen. So, you know, I plan on, you know, going in, and if they bring in competition, that's just the nature of the job, just in the NFL in general. And then I, in my opinion, specialists, no matter who you are, should always expect competition. And I always do better whenever there's competition, because, you know, sometimes you know, you want to say, oh, I don't want to compare myself to other people. But to me, whenever it's an actual competition, it's really good, you know, for me to compete. And I like winning competitions, so it's fun for me. And then also, you know, you have some things to learn from the people that you're competing with. And, you know, if they do something really well, how can I do it better than them? Or how can I improve, you know, something that's weak in my game? So I'm looking forward to whatever happens this offseason.
Yeah, I think just from a fan's perspective, I would definitely want to see you be a part of the team next season. And I'm glad that you mentioned wanting to win, because of course, one of the things I wanted to ask you is, you're on Twitter, you talk about games, you mentioned to me before you live stream. Do you have a specific favorite game right now that you're playing?
Right now, so I really like multiplayer games, games where you know have a team, because I enjoy games the most whenever you have to communicate with people and kind of plan and do all that stuff. So right now, my favorite like multiplayer game is League of Legends. I've been playing that since like 2013. And then the one single player game I've been playing since the season's been over is The Witcher 3. And that was spurred on because of the Netflix series. I've had The Witcher 3 in my Steam for like, I don't know, 6 months, and I just haven't gotten around to playing it. But then after watching The Witcher show, I absolutely had to play it, and I love it so much. I love how detailed everything is in the, you know, kind of the Witcher universe.
And I see that you're a big 100 Thieves person. Is that just because of kind of Nade Shot? I know a lot of people like myself follow them strictly because, you know, the Optic days and following Nade Shot and kind of going wherever he goes. Or is that just, you know, you play League of Legends and that's just kind of a team that you grabbed onto?
So 100 Thieves. So I actually haven't been into esports all that long, probably about almost a full year this year, I would say. In college, I followed a little bit of the LCS whenever Fnatic was like undefeated in the regular competitive season in like 2015, I think it was, for League. But I really like 100 Thieves just because of the image that they kind of have. They have this awesome streetwear brand, but like, you know that they're an esports organization, and just the way that they run things, I think is really, really cool. They're kind of have like a bad boy look to it, and not your run of the mill C9 or TSM stuff like that. They have a really cool look and a really cool aesthetic, and I know that some teams have streaming personalities on their esports orgs, and hopefully if I can build up my social media presence and kind of like my whole gaming shtick and that stuff, I would love to be like a part of their creative team or something like that, especially because how popular streetwear is in pro sports. Like, people always have the pictures of them walking into the games, or whether it's the NBA or the NFL. And I think wearing 100 Thieves stuff would be super cool. I don't have any of their merch yet because it's super hard to get a hold of. But I've actually been playing Fortnite with one of their Fortnite pros, Cease. I played with him yesterday. I'm probably gonna play a little bit more with him today.
Him and Elevator Beast.
Yeah, yeah. They're cool. I've been in contact with Elevate. We haven't gotten to play yet. But yeah, I'm just, you know. And then one of their other creators, Brooke AB, when I was streaming last year, she and I were on like a bunch of podcasts together back when she was only averaging like 70, 80, 100 viewers. And then I would say about 6 months ago, she blew up to like 5K average viewers on Twitch. So it's pretty. And then 100 Thieves brought her on their creative team, which I thought was pretty sweet.
Yeah, it seems like Nade and their whole team there for content creation has been very good at picking out talent. Especially, you know, Cease and Elevate, very, very smart pickups for them. Did everything to support them. Of course, there was some few things there with the 100 Thieves house that they were using that had a little bit of an issue. Because of a mess. And then, of course, you know, picking up Valkyrie when that was something, and she had mentioned that they came in at the last second and just kind of blew her away. Getting Courage JD off of, you know, Optic, going there, previously a COD caster, Brooke AB that you mentioned, the Mob, who are really big on Twitter, especially with, you know, teenagers, even people my age, you know, like 21, our age actually, that are, you know, just people who go on Twitter and all they do is meme. And they would know about them just for that. So I feel like from a content perspective, they're building it just the way that guys like Optic, you know, have built their brand and done it the right way and kind of gotten their fans involved, which has been really nice to see. Do you play any sports games? Do you play Madden? I know. Do you touch any of that stuff or no?
I actually don't. I was trash at like NCAA 2014, whenever that came out, or 2013. I can't remember which one was the last one, but, yeah, all my teammates in college used to just absolutely whoop me in it, so I never really got into it too much. I like fantasy-type games, and then Apex was really, really fun when it first came out, but it's kind of trash right now. I'm waiting for, I think it's like the next Call of Duty Battle Royale or something. I can't remember which one it is. But
yeah, they've been teasing an update for a very long time. Joe Seacott has been talking about it, and they just haven't given any updates, and the game is slowly dying, in my opinion, at least for Modern Warfare. But I would say that it's kind of a good thing. Madden is, they get heat every single year for their rating of players. They don't have correct names for a lot of positions, and a lot of people get upset with that. But it's interesting that you said Apex is kind of trash. I played it for about a month because I generally like EA games most of the time. Thought it was great, and then once I upgraded all my stuff to PC, I was like, well, I can't play with my friends on Xbox, so there's like no point of playing this anymore.
Exactly. Like, you don't want to go back to console once you get a PC.
Not at all. I have friends that come to me and like, hey, can you plug in your Xbox? I'm like, dude, I got I have my PC, can finally play games. I have four monitors in front of me. I can play any game that's cross-platform. Why would I want to plug in my Xbox right now to play?
Never, ever.
Yeah. Lastly, I want to ask, you said you're a Michigan native?
Kind of. I've been all over the place. So I was born in Illinois, and then when I was 6, I moved to Oklahoma, and then when I was 15, I moved to Michigan, and I basically lived there ever since. But now my fiance and I are buying a house down here in Florida, so I guess technically now I'll be a Florida resident.
I hope you have a good real estate agent, because houses here are a little
pricey. They're rough.
Yeah.
It's hard to find a house that has everything you want and is also in your budget. So we finally landed on one. So we're in the process of getting that one.
That's good. I know for us, like my mom, we lived in Morningside Park, which is off of 55th and Biscayne Boulevard. And that was like, it's a really expensive, but she had bought it 20 years ago. So she'd owned it for a while. And she's a retired teacher now. And we had to move because the taxes and everything just got too high for her. And I can only imagine some of my former neighbors. I'm looking at the, you know, houses being built next to them. I'm like, damn, they're going to be run out soon because things are just way more expensive than they probably need to be. Anything that you want to say? This is going out to FIU podcast area, SFMN, the South Florida Media Network. Is there anything that you want to say where people can find you, how they can continue to follow you, you know, streaming, Twitter, Instagram?
Yeah, so I haven't streamed for a little while, but I'll still shout out my Twitch. Basically, all of my social media, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitch, is all Tabor Snapping, TayborSnapping. Yeah, that's pretty much everything on my social media and stuff like that. Also, I have a YouTube channel. I haven't uploaded anything yet, but hopefully once I keep playing with a couple of these like Fortnite pros, and then if any actual good multiplayer games come out, I'll probably just upload just random gaming stuff if people want to watch that.
Yeah, YouTube is a big thing.
I was able to, luckily whenever I was streaming on Twitch, I was able to make some decently big connections and with the streaming community. So like I'm really tight with like Destiny, Hassan Abi, Trainwrex, Devin Nash, and then like I'm kind of acquaintances with like XQC. Oh, Andy Milonakis too. I actually talked to him here and there. That's probably the coolest person I met through Twitch.
Andy Milonakis.
Yeah, dude. Been,
almost like a cult icon in a way for so many years.
Yeah.
He's especially like with YouTube, there's a lot of like those commentator YouTubers who he's always kind of been featured in. Him, like guys like him, Max Bofo, iDubbbz, Filthy Frank, they're always anything for views. Those guys are always in something. I want to thank you so much for joining me on the podcast, and hopefully have you on soon again, maybe sometime in person. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Dude, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.